back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Is this a trap game for Oregon? Friday night game, cross multiple time zones, Ducks going to Purdue. Sam King does a fantastic job covering Purdue football for the Journal and Courier in Lafayette. I used to, years and years and years ago, I was a beat reporter who covered Purdue football. Drew Brees was a freshman. We were both young, and I have fond memories of watching the Boilermakers, and Gene Katie was the basketball coach, and those were good times. This is a different Purdue program, and it's even a different Purdue program that I think we saw a few weeks ago at Reser Stadium play against Oregon State. The Boilermakers scored some points last week, looked better on offense. Sam King from the Journal and Courier here to talk about it. How you doing, Sam?
Doing well. That was a long time ago. If you're throwing out Drew Brees, so
I know it's not okay to make me feel old. Come on, man. No, like I was young and Brees was young, and then when he retired, it hit me, Sam. I was like, that was a long time ago that I covered that program. Give me an idea of what's happened to Purdue maybe in the last few weeks. Feels like they came out of a bye week and are playing better football.
Well, things just kind of snowballed early in the season, and you know, it was just a cycle of turning the ball over, not forcing turnovers on the other side. When the defense played well, the offense played poorly. When the offense would get something going, the defense would play poorly, and it just seemed like there could never be a complete game. And for whatever reason, you know, I really thought, I know Purdue was picked to finish last in the Big Ten, but I did not think that would be talking about a one-win football team going into this week. So
yeah,
things just kind of got out of control, I think, and Purdue's starting to finally figure it out. Obviously, Ryan Walters fired offensive coordinator Graham Harrell 2 weeks ago, turned it over to an analyst to call games against Wisconsin, and you know, it didn't go great. And then Ryan Walters, who's a defensive-minded coach and has a defensive coaching background, a former coordinator at Missouri, at Illinois, he said, I'm going to call the offense. And that's kind of where you saw this explosion in points come against Illinois that I don't think anybody could have predicted. You know, I like the fact that he tried to go for two, even though it didn't work. But I don't think that the decision in that moment was probably right with a freshman quarterback who hasn't really played a whole lot. But you got to admire the guy's guts to go for it there. It tells you that Ryan Walters is going to stick with calling the offense now, and he's going to be aggressive. So you're looking at something totally different than Oregon probably thought it was going to face, even a week ago.
Yeah, and a lot has been made of the time zones and the travel, but you're right. Last week, the Boilermakers score 49 points in a overtime loss to Illinois. 50-49 is the final. Ryan Brown threw for 297 yards and 3 touchdowns, carried 17 times for 118 yards. Do you feel like that's the plan this week? Is it put the ball in Ryan Brown's hands and let him make plays?
Well, Hudson Card was, you know, far and away. Ryan Brown came during the second semester of what would have been a senior year of high school. So since then, 2 years ago, he and Hudson Card have competed for that playing time at quarterback, and Hudson Card was always far ahead, probably in the minds of the coaches, in terms of being the starter. Then Hudson gets a concussion and couldn't play last week. Ryan Brown comes in, steps in, and does a great job, and now it's kind of hard to take the job away from him. So he is more of a running threat quarterback. He did show in the second half, people forget now the way that game turned out. At halftime, Purdue had 9 passing yards. So he really turned it on in that second half and looked like a different quarterback. But he is he's a threat with his legs, obviously. He's the first Purdue quarterback to rush for 100-plus yards in 14 years. So that tells you right there that he's a guy that can hurt you with his legs. He did the same thing when he had to come in and play last season at Northwestern. He was kind of a running threat there. But if he can throw the ball, that's going to cause some problems. And the difference is, you know, I know Illinois is ranked and Illinois is having a great season. Oregon is far and above a better defensive team than Illinois. And also, I think it probably helped Purdue somewhat last week that Ryan Walters, just 2 years ago, was the defensive coordinator at Illinois. He's coached some of the guys that he was playing against. He's, you know, kind of schemed up that defense, even though it's a different variation of it. He probably knows some ways to beat that defense. And I'm sure coming off of a bye week with a quarterback that Illinois probably didn't prepare for, there was a lot of advantages in Purdue's, you know, going Purdue's way last week that probably helped it out. And now, you know, you're facing a different animal in Oregon altogether, I think.
Give me an idea. We're talking to Sam King, by the way, who covers Purdue football for the Journal and Courier. Give me an idea of how Oregon's win over Ohio State kind of played in Big Ten country.
Well, yeah, I think just, you know, the traditional Big Ten football fans in the Midwest probably felt going into the season that Ohio State is far and above. It's always been Ohio State and Michigan for as long. I know Wisconsin's won some titles and Iowa's been in there, but those have been the two kind of programs that were the mecca of Big Ten football that you're always like, those are the teams we have to beat. And going into the season, I think a lot of people just assumed, yeah, you know, there's four new teams coming in from the West, but Ohio State is far and above the most talented team, and it might very well be, but Oregon obviously won that game. So that was huge and kind of shaking up the Big Ten and saying, hey, these, you know, I know UCLA's struggling. I know, you know, Washington isn't what it was last year, but I think this is going to be very interesting now because Ohio State's got a loss on its, you know, on its resume, and Oregon now, you know, I think Oregon probably should win this week. It's kind of in the driver's seat to be in that, you know, in that playoff at the end of the year. And then it's going to be a jumbled up mess probably with Ohio State in there for that second spot. So I think it just showed that, hey, you know, this is a new league. It's not the traditional Michigan, Ohio State, and occasionally, you know, somebody else sneaks their way into there and messes things up. Now this is going to be a lot of fun, not just this year, but moving forward, especially, you know, as I assume UCLA eventually someday gets back on track. USC is clearly a good team. Washington has been good for a lot of years. So should be a lot of fun.
Give me an idea. Do you think Ohio State's reaction, like they may wait and see, you know, they've got Penn State and Michigan and game with Purdue still on the schedule, but Ohio State may wait to see kind of how it shakes out. Where do they really end up in the playoff picture? But if they don't, let's just say they don't make the Big Ten championship game. Let's say it's Penn State and Oregon that are playing in there. Will there be a reaction from Ohio State? Are they reactionary? Will they you know, talk about changing the structure of the program, or will Ryan Day's seat get warm? Give us an idea of the expectations in the Big Ten for Ohio State.
Well, you know, Ohio State is kind of its own worst enemy in terms of the success, kind of raises the bar that Ryan Day is a guy that every year people are like, man, I don't know if he can stick around, especially with the, you know, losing to Michigan 3 years in a row does not sit well with Ohio State fans. So I don't know how long they're going to give him if he can't get into the playoffs and compete for a national championship, because Ohio State cares about one thing, and that's winning a national championship, even more so now in this NIL era where, you know, now you can go out and, you know, with schools like Oregon and Ohio State that have the kind of NIL backing that those programs do, you expect to be in that in that playoff, and, you know, more so in a year like this, expect to be playing for a national championship. So I mean it's hard to fire a guy who's had as much success as Ryan Day, but Ohio State fans have worn pretty thin on him over the years, I believe.
Defensively, Purdue against Oregon, is that a more, I think, important matchup in your mind than the offensive side of the ball against Oregon, or are they, where does that stand with you? Because I see 50 points from Illinois and I go, gosh, will Oregon get 50 on them? Will Oregon get 60 on them? I start to think that way.
Well, I don't think that you're wrong in thinking that way. Dylan Gabriel will be the best quarterback Purdue has seen, and the defense has been susceptible to giving up big plays, not just this year, but as long as this staff's been here the last two seasons, I don't think any Power 4 or Power 5 team has given up more big chunk plays than Purdue's defense. So it's a defense that relies on pass rush and creating chaos, but when it doesn't, there's a lot of open space in the field, and that's why a lot of teams have had success. You know, last week, Illinois was in a 3rd and 20, I think, and ended up getting a touchdown on the next play. So that's the kind of, you know, I guess, risk you take with this kind of a defense. And on top of that, you know, I think the secondary at Purdue was supposed to be a strength this season, and now it's down a starter. Tez Johnson will probably be the best receiver Purdue's faced so far this year. Evan Stewart clearly had the game of his life last week. So you factor that in. Jordan James is probably the best back or one of the best backs that Purdue has faced all year. It doesn't bode well for Purdue's defense to go in and hope that, you know, this is the team that you can get it right against.
We're talking to Sam King. He is at the Journal and Courier in Lafayette covering Purdue football, among other things. Sam, you were one of the first people on social media to point out that Dan Lanning's 12-man on the field strategy was a strategy. I think in real time during the game, you tweeted, hey, he just traded 4 seconds for 5 yards. You'd do that all day long. How much talk has there been in your region about what Lanning did and what the NCAA might do to mitigate advantages like that?
Well, I've seen that the NCAA might react in season, which is uncharacteristic. But what a lot of people do, it's a copycat world. And once somebody does it and you say, hey, you know, that was pretty brilliant and it worked in Oregon's favor, we're going to set something up where if we're in a situation where the team is just outside of field goal range, we'll throw, you know, why not 12? Why not 20? Just put your whole team out there on the field and get the penalty. But yeah, I kind of thought that. I was watching it on TV and they noted there's some confusion on defense. Oregon has too many players on the field. And I was like, the guy just kind of looked like he walked off the sideline on purpose.
Yeah,
and
still, right.
And that's when I was, no, I think that Dan Lanning or somebody on Oregon staff said, hey, just go out there and you know, it's going to be a 5-yard penalty, but we're going to take the time off the clock. So clearly it's a rule that needs to be looked at, but I think it was a pretty brilliant move given and the scenario's got to work out. It's got to be the right down distance, you know, place on the field and everything else, but it happened to be kind of the perfect storm for Oregon to try to do that.
I'm told by a source at the NCAA that they will give an interpretation of that rule on Wednesday. It should come in the afternoon or evening. The likely result is that the officials are going to tell coaches, if you do that, you're going to get the 5-yard penalty, and we're going to reset the game clock back to the original time. You're not going to be able to buy a few seconds for 5 yards. Sam King is our guest. The potential with the travel, we have seen 13 teams in the Big Ten travel across multiple time zones. Those teams are 3-10. Is that a real trend, or is too much being made of that, Sam? Do you think that the travel is a factor, or is it just coincidental?
I think in football it might be coincidental. Now, when we get into the basketball travel and things of that sort, and then a lot of the Olympic sports and things like that, it may become more of an issue. But I always thought this was going to affect the four schools coming into the Big Ten more than anyone else because, you know, the way it's set up, a school like Purdue is going to go make one West Coast trip a year. And the schools that are out west are going to make several. And when you're talking about having to go to the Rutgers and Maryland's of the world, that's you're flying from one side of the country to the other. So I do think there's a chance that that could factor in. But it's hard to say. I mean, you probably need many years of data to really point to it and get some evidence. I don't see that being an issue for Oregon because I just think that there's such a gap in talent between these two teams this week that shouldn't factor in.
I'm looking for examples of teams that were clearly not better than the other and yet, you know, and they win the game. And I, you know, Rutgers beating Washington gets held up, but, you know, I don't know how good Washington is, right? They go to Iowa and they get beat and Indiana goes into the Rose Bowl and wins. Yeah, that's a team that had to travel, and you know they looked pretty good against UCLA, although UCLA's bad. It might just be that good teams beat bad teams. Sam King is with us. Sam, construct a scenario in which Purdue upsets Oregon, does the unthinkable. What goes right for the Boilermakers?
I mean, probably going to have to be a lot of different things. And so far this season, a lot of the bad breaks have gone against Purdue. Last week it was a kickoff that just fell between the second and third line on the kick return team, and Illinois recovers and ends up getting a touchdown off that, and that truly was a difference in the game. Purdue's going to have to cause turnovers. That's kind of how it really got started going last week, was strip sack turned into a fumble return for a touchdown. So I think Purdue's defense has to clearly step it up, cause turnovers, and turn those turnovers into points, and then the offense has to basically build off of what started last week because, you know, 49 points is great, but you're going to have to do that consistently and show because before this, Purdue's offense was just woeful. There's a reason that the offensive coordinator was fired. So, but I think back to, I think it was 2008, Oregon came to West Lafayette, and I covered that game, and nobody was giving pretty much of a chance, and it went to overtime. I remember talking to LeGarrette Blount after that game. That's how long ago it's been. So, I don't know. I can't picture any way that Oregon doesn't come in here and win this game and win it running away.
Sam, before I let you go, the Indiana-Purdue rivalry is real. How are Purdue fans doing with the Indiana start to the football season?
I think that's the way that it's worked around here, a little inside info for people who have ever been from Indiana. Most Indiana football fans are actually Notre Dame football fans and Indiana basketball fans. And then if Indiana is good or is in contention for a bowl or something, they hop on that bandwagon. Right now that bandwagon is full force, and it's just for people who root for Purdue, it's kind of like, you know, doubling down or whatever, because your rival is 6-0 and has a first year head coach. And then just a year ago, you brought in a new coach that you thought was going to keep this thing going, because 2 years ago, Purdue was in the Big Ten championship game. And then it's been kind of a downhill slide ever since this new staff has come in. And now you're looking at a team that's clearly, like, if not the worst team in the Big Ten, one of the two worst teams in the Big Ten right now. So that hurts that you're rooting for a team that's bad, and that probably hurts worse that Indiana fans are rubbing it in that the Hoosiers are 6-0 and kind of the surprise darling of the Big Ten this season.
Sam King, I appreciate you, man. You can find Sam's work online, obviously, and you can read him at the Journal and Courier. And I will tweet his Twitter handle if you want to read about the opposing team for Oregon this week. Sam King, thank you, man.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Up next, Jerry Jones has doubled down against the radio show host that he criticized for criticizing him, or were they just asking hard questions? Jerry Jones put himself on an island. Plus, we'll talk about Oregon State. How much of an island are they on defensively? Next.